Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another great episode we have here at Suspense Radio One-on-One. Today's show is more of an extension of Suspense Radio than the normal Suspense Radio One-on-One, which is in partnered with PartnersInCrimeTours.net. I am your host, John Robb, and I am glad that you guys are all listening to our show wherever, however, and whenever you are and where you're at. And today's show, we're going to have two authors for you. We're going to kick it off with author Johnny Shaw. We had him on before, talked about his latest book called Plaster City. It's a Jimmy Vetter novel. And then we're going to have Karen Kezik-Innan. I'm going to have to ask her to spell her name. I try to pronounce her name. But Kezik-Innan, and about her Jamie Zarlin mystery series with Black Current. So sit back, relax. We got an hour for you, and it all starts right now. He is author Johnny Shaw. His latest book is called Plaster City. It is a Jimmy Vetter novel. Johnny, thanks for coming back to the show. How are you doing?
Oh, doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
So again, like I just said, Plaster City is the latest in your Jimmy Vetter novel. We had you on when you were talking about your books. You had Dove Season, Big Maria, and all and the books that are in your series here. So now Plaster City is out. Came back out here in May, so everybody can go get it right now with Jimmy and Bobby and all the havocs that you're going to have them run through. Give everybody a little bit about the series and now Plaster City as it moves forward.
It started with Dove Season was the first novel in the series, and that introduces Jimmy and Bobby. It's all set on the Calexico-Mexicali border, which is the Southern California. It's almost like near Yuma, Arizona, but in California. So it's in this desert. All the stories are set in that around the Salton Sea and that those desert towns. And so it's a farming community. But it's also a border town. And the first one was Plaster City. Big Maria is actually a standalone novel, not with those characters. And then Plaster City, this one, is the direct follow-up to Dove Season. You know, so this is actually the second in that series. And, this time Jimmy is like trying to live the straight life. He's trying to just be a farmer and a dad. But his friend Bobby is like, you know, 1,000 tons of trouble. And so he constantly is bringing him on adventures. So when Bobby's daughter goes missing, Jimmy feels obligated and wants to help him look for her. And so in that search, just, you know, all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, I apologize, Big Maria. I forgot that one is not part of,
that's
series.
Fine. That's okay.
Yeah.
It's still set in the same part of the country, and it's a companion in some ways.
They could have run into each other, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So Jimmy and Bobby, when you decided back in Dove Season you were going to write them and now you're coming into Plaster City, has kind of things gone the way that you thought they were going to go? Because this year's now set 2 years after the events, so you kind of had to, you know, work a little bit. when you're giving the fans in Plaster City and you're giving it a two-year span, when you're thinking about doing that, are you like, okay, do I need to kind of explain things that happened in 2 years? My characters, are they, how are they going to change in 2 years, emotionally, physically, and things like that? Were you making all that consciously when you had to write all that down and get it all together?
I don't know. I mean, it's I feel like I do very little consciously. It's just kind of, you know, I just kind of write it. That it was, you know, really, in some ways, it was, it had been, the book was going to come out kind of 2 years after Dove Season, but I wanted, there were a couple reasons that, like, I did want a space of time in between. One, it was the ages of the children, like both Jimmy's son and if Bobby's daughter was going to run away. She was referenced and mentioned in the first book, and she was, I believe, I want to say she was like 13 or 14. That was too, I wanted her to be more like 16, 17, you know, I wanted her to be a little older, mm-hmm. so that that... There's some things like, which is interesting because it's, that was just an aside in the first book. And I didn't know that was going to be an important character in the second book, but you kind of committed to the name you gave that person and the thing, just, you know, names you might have just pulled out of a hat that, yeah, there's no real, it was interesting. I talked to a few authors about this, that the second book in the series is an interesting challenge because you kind of want it to stand on its own. Yet you also want it to be a part of something. You want to see a progression. People that have read the first book, you want to see some evolution of the characters, or you want to see not necessarily a lot of reference, but you want them to be tied together in some way, I think. So it was interesting trying to find that balance and trying, because you also want, you want people to be able to just pick up the book and enjoy it.
Right.
You know, without,
yeah,
yeah,
I mean,
without,
I mean, let's face it, I mean, that's the whole... you know, basis of writing and getting characters is the entertainment value that you're bringing to your fans. And so that's one of the big things. Whenever you're having to sit down and you're conceptualizing a book, then I guess that that's kind of the first thing that you have to remember is that, hey, you know what, I need to entertain so they'll come back. But then when you get the sense of realism and everything else that you have going on, that's kind of when the challenges kind of do lie. Because, you know, fans are very picky. And they're very observant. And they'll be like, you know what, you can't mention that because you didn't say it before and this and that. So you kind of have to be very careful whenever you're thinking about, whenever you're doing those things.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't imagine a long series that, like, because, you know, I have editors, so at least within the book they'll catch me when I make mistakes. You know, they'll...
Mm-hmm.
They'll remind me that Wednesday comes after Tuesday or something, like, you know, that like they'll catch
right.
all that, like that little stuff. But it's not like they're combing through the previous books to necessarily have the, you know, in television you call it a Bible, you know the whole, like the whole world of the story and who's, you know, they're not. I always worry. I'm sure I've used the same joke in more than one book because I don't keep track of that. Like, and I only have
exactly.
I have a very shallow pool of, you know, material that I can draw from. But, so yeah, I'm sure I've done that, and I'll continue to do it because I don't really reread. I did reread Dove Season before I wrote Plaster City. I actually listened to it.
Okay.
It was on a long drive. That was interesting. That was, because, you know, I don't,
yeah.
Other than when you're working on it, other when you're rewriting or editing, just to sit and read it in, like, a year later or something. That was an interesting process.
Yeah, you know, I've never really asked or ever thought about that. Like, when you get to, like, your audio book and, you know, how many authors sit back and say, and try to look at it from a fan's perspective and be like, yeah, I mean, I get this. Or, wow, that part, when you say it out loud, kind of is boring, isn't it? I mean, do you have those kinds of things?
Right. Well, it was... We one, it felt like that. Like I was on a long. I was doing a long book thing, and one of those stretches was. I mean, it was really long. Like it was like Portland to Phoenix or something. Like,
oh yeah.
And so, and I like a long drive, and so I'm fine. And but I knew I was going to be starting Plaster City, or I might have already started it. And I was like, I think I should, you know. And I was like, oh, I have the audiobook, so I'll listen to it. But it feels, you feel like kind of a stooge, you know. It's it's about like you're, it's kind of egotistical in a way. It's like you're listening to your own, but I don't know. It's just listening,
I know,
to my,
you're listening
own,
to
my
your
words.
It's kind of like Googling yourself. I mean, you kind of,
yeah,
you kind of,
yeah,
do it just to see what's there, but then you kind of feel bad afterwards when you're done. You're like, God, did I really just do a Kardashian moment and literally just Google myself to see what was,
exactly,
going on?
Exactly, because it has like a practical, there's a practical reason why you do it, or you can do it. But but listening to it, it helped, because it was getting the meter of the character's voice and things like that, and
yeah,
I could have done it with reading, but I had the long drive, so I would carry around Dove Season with me to write when I wrote, because just to check things and reference it.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't, my stories aren't like so intricate that I have to worry about. So the geography is actually all real geography, so I don't need, I know where everything is. Like,
mm-hmm,
the physical geography of the world is like, I know where everything is in relationship to each other, because I'm just using, even if I don't call it the real place, I'm using a real place in my mind that is there, and I know exactly where it is, so I know what's where in the world of the story. And I tend to be exploring new, each book explores new areas of that desert. There's so many little desert towns, both north,
yeah,
I mean, all, on all sides of the Salt Sea out there, that it's, and even into, I've written into Yuma in Arizona, and Big Maria is half in Arizona and half in, it's all around the Colorado River.
So let's get into here Plaster City a little bit, and let's talk about some of these secondary characters, some of the ones that you felt that when you started to write the book and you're getting into it, that kind of jumped here off the page that fans have probably noticed and you've taken notice, even when you were done and you went back and you looked at it, and you're like, I can't believe that this guy or this girl had more of a voice or more of an action than I kind of thought they would. And maybe you want to explore them further. Did you ever have that kind of sense in the book?
Yeah, I think the characters that were characters carried over from the first book, and then also characters that are introduced, new characters that are introduced. And
mm-hmm,
it's that desire to bring something new to them. And the books are in the first person; they're in Jimmy's first person, so everything is through his eyes. And so how much depth you can give to a character is always going to be through his perception. And because of the way this story was constructed, where Jimmy and Bobby are on this constant search, I knew that none of the other characters were actually going to get that much time. So that the depth of,
right,
that character has to be communicated quickly, but without it being caricature or stereotype or too simplistic. You still want them to have depth. So that was an,
right,
interesting challenge. Even the characters that carried over, they're in it, but they're in it. Like Angie, which is Jimmy's girlfriend, and Griselda, which is Bobby's, in this case, ex-girlfriend, who both appeared in Dove Season. They were integral characters there. There was, I tried ways initially to try to force them a little into the story, and it just didn't work. And so I had to, I don't want to say they're on the periphery, but they became more thematic than they did, like, actively part of the investigation. And
mm-hmm,
the same with, I mean, there's it's odd, because to call characters comic relief in my thing means that they're really broad, because the main characters are pretty broad. But Buck and Snout, they're two kind of farmer buddies, who both appear in Dove Season. They come back, and they're a part of the active investigation, but they actually serve a kind of different purpose, that they're, I guess, a little, I mean, they have depth to a degree, but they're more like,
mm-hmm,
these kind of goofball maniacs. So the new characters, I think, are interesting in this story,
yeah,
because of so much of the story is about, it's about Bobby. He's looking for this daughter that he sees like once a year, like this. It was from a previous relationship, and he didn't even know he had the daughter. So there's already a distance, and he's not even sure why he's looking for her. Like, I mean, it's a missing girl, so it's not like it's anything bad, but it's like he doesn't even know her. And so Julie, who's the missing girl, is an interesting character. Her mother is an interesting character. They're interested, introduced to a world of Astoria, and Jimmy's introduced to them pretty much as the reader is. It's fun to write new. I mean, I just write new characters all the time.
So what was kind of the biggest thing that you learned, not only maybe about yourself as an author, but about your characters going from Dove Season now to Plaster City?
What did I learn them? Oh man!
What did you learn? I mean, like, what did you learn maybe in the process of okay, now going into the because you have your Blood and Tacos series, so you kind of are already familiar, but this is kind of a little different kind of writing that you did before. So was there something that you looked back on in Dove Season that you wanted to improve on moving forward with the characters or things like that, that you made a conscious effort to do and now in the second book?
Oh, yeah. I think, in all my books, whether it's apparent to the reader or not, like, I believe good books have to be ambitious. I feel like a good book means that the writer is trying to push themselves a little bit and do something. Dove Season was just writing a novel. I honestly hadn't written any fiction since junior high. I was a screenwriter prior to writing Dove Season. And so just writing a novel, it was the first novel I ever wrote, and it's the first real fiction I'd written in a long time. And so it turned out, I'm happy with how it turned out, but it's definitely to me a first novel. I look at it now and it's a little, it's maybe 5,000 words too long. And like, there's things about it that I look at and I'm proud of it, but it's a first novel. It's not what I would necessarily write now that I've gained a little bit of experience. The ambition in Big Maria, this sounds ridiculous, is I just wanted to see if I could write something in the third person. I mean, it seems like such a simplistic thing that the first person voice of Jimmy Veeder is so distinct, and it's very much mine, that I wanted to see what it would be like to write a multiple character story that required the third person to be told, you know, that without losing a sense of voice. Like, how do you find a narrative voice within third person? I thought that was an interesting challenge.
Right.
And I always veer toward comedy when I do that because that gives me a little out. At least I can be entertaining even if it's a bit of a mess, you know. And so then coming to Plaster City, I get the challenge of the second book, but the real challenge to me is that I was going to take Bobby, who is essentially the comic relief to Jimmy. He's the bigger character. He's a bit of a maniac. He gets most of the funny lines. And I was going to make him, put him in a serious situation. So it was, how jokey can he be if his daughter is at risk? Like, and that to me seemed like a very human circumstance, meaning that serious things happen to funny people all the time. Do they remain fun? Like, is it going to be entertaining, or is it going to be true to his character? And for a while, I thought I painted myself in a corner by doing that. Like, I felt like that might have been an error in judgment of saying, because you're taking the kind of, I don't want to say the, like, archetypal, but, like, he served a certain function. And
correct.
I felt like if I could pull it off, I would have an interesting thing tonally, like, between it being funny. Funny people, you know, go through serious circumstances in their life. One of my biggest gripes with a lot of crime fiction I read is that it has a single tone. It's like it's a gritty world and the world is all gritty, or it's a goofy world and the world's all gritty. Like, and I feel like if fiction's gonna capture life, then it should capture that the emotional swing that we go through every day. That it should be a little bit of everything. Because if it's all dark, there's no counterpoint. There's no, you know, it's just a dark world. So,
absolutely, yeah. Then it's just something that's not, it doesn't have any realistic to it. And I don't think that's what fans are looking for either. Yeah, you know, they all know that it's a fiction story and that they're being entertained. But I do agree that, you know, you're bringing in a lot of the realism too, because that's what draws them in. I want to remind everybody that we're speaking here with author Johnny Shaw. Go to johnnyshaw.net for a lot more information, of course, on his Jimmy Vedder Fiasco series. Plaster City is the latest book. And that's the one, the Dove Season was the first one. So now that you're kind of out, and you're kind of doing, and now you say, you know, like you were in VoucherCon, and you're going to all these different things, and what's kind of the sense that you're hearing from fans? What's the feedback that you're getting from them when they meet you and they want to talk to you about your books?
People seem to, I mean, it's very cool. I didn't really, like, the idea of fans is still a very, it's a fascinating, that people, like, are looking forward to my books is really a nutty idea, you know, and I respect that, and I still kind of write in a vacuum. I don't think you can think about it too much when you sit down and write. You just, because whatever they like is whatever you've been doing, so you kind of be true to whatever that is, and you hope they go along with it. None of those books did I write with like kind of like fans in mind, other than the idea of I want it to be good, I want it to be entertaining, I want it to be, you know, I want it to be all the things that I wanted it to be, and, you know, and hopefully people, you know, come along for the ride. People seem to, I think they think I'm crazier than I actually am in life when I meet people. Like, I think my characters in my books, they drink how they drink and fight, and they are. It's all set where I grew up, so I know a guy named Buck Buck, and I know a guy named Snout. Like, those are real guys. Like, and I'm actually going to see him in a couple of weeks. So they aren't like the characters, but I did use their names. But those characters are based on people. I mean, I still go down there. I still have ties down in Imperial Valley, which is, that's the actual interesting people that, the people that I get emails from are when I go down there and do events, because they feel like the response has been great from the people in Imperial Valley where the books are set, I'm kind of representing a place that people usually just drive past, and
right,
and they feel like I'm doing it fair, like that it's kind of warts and all. Like, I'm not necessarily portraying it as the most beautiful place in the world, but I'm portraying the people as something, which is what a place is all about, and I'm giving it voice, and I think I'm giving it a fairly honest voice, and partly just by keeping the geography real. Plaster City, California is a real place. Like, it's not how I portrayed it in the book, but it's an actual, you could go to Plaster City, and it's this one big gypsum factory in the middle of nowhere. And so all the places
down there. I don't
think
people that are not from this area even really know what that area is actually like if you haven't been down there, because, I mean, I'm Southern California, so I've kind of been out in those kind of desert towns, and it's like you're in another country. I mean, it's like you're in another country. You're like,
yeah,
this is
because,
America?
Yeah.
There's no way.
Well, because you think of the country as, like, particularly like if you drive, I mean, most people, like if they're in LA, they've driven on the 10. They've gone through,
right,
like Desert Hot Springs and Indio, and maybe if they've gone to Phoenix, they've gone through Blythe and Quartzsite and like some of those like smaller towns on the 10. Most of the Imperial, which is north of the Salton Sea, but definitely a part of the same area. South of the Salton Sea is Highway 8, which goes from San Diego to Yuma, and that's really the stretch that it's at. And that goes all right across. It runs almost the entire time about maybe 8-10 miles north of the Mexican border, so it's running along the border for a lot of that. And so like Calexico, El Centro, and all that vicinity is like, and that's all, it's actually pretty, because once you're out of the desert, between the dunes and the desert, like it's all farms, it's all irrigated farms. So
right,
it looks a little more Midwestern, just in terms of visually. It's not how you would expect the desert to look, all of a sudden it's this oasis in there.
Right.
But it's still kind of, you know, it's still poor and.
Oh yeah, they got their own
there.
Brand of justice down there too.
Right.
I mean, there's their own brand of justice. The people do their. I mean, it is. It's just a totally. It's a totally separate world. That you're
well,
just like, wow.
The divide between the rural and the urban in the United States is still a massive divide.
Yeah, it is.
City folk don't necessarily feel comfortable in the country, and when people from the country go into the city, it's a little overwhelming. I mean, it's still, it's because life is very, very different. The speed of life, the sense of community, it's very, very different, like being in a rural community. And, not, I mean, the people that, most of the people that write about rural communities came from them. Like, you have to have some sort of understanding, you know?
Right. And that's your job as an author, to kind of portray that. So,
yeah, you can.
And that's
you
what you got to do. You got to give that out in your books.
Right, and there's actually something exotic about it in a way. It's like you're.
Yeah.
It's. I mean, it's not, you know, Tangier. It's not like, you know, showing that.
Right.
But it is a place that, I mean, to be perfectly honest, some people would rather read about than go to. So why not allow them the chance to read about it?
Right.
You know. And
well, John. Yeah. I mean, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I mean, we are out of time. I could keep talking, you know, for longer than this, but it's been fascinating. So happy to see your second book here in the Jimmy Vedder Fiasco series, Plaster City. JohnnyShaw.net is the website. So, again, we want to thank you for coming on. We're going to see you in VoucherCon coming up for the end of, close to the end of the year in Long Beach. So we'll get together and we'll say hi then.
Yeah, I'll definitely be there. Definitely say hi. And thanks so much. Thanks so much for having me on the show. It's always really fun.
Thanks a lot, Johnny. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
So, again, everybody, that is author Johnny Shaw with his book Plaster City, a second in a Jimmy Vedder Fiasco series. The first was called Dove Season. Go out and get it today. You heard from Johnny. Fascinating book. Great writer. One that you should definitely get involved with to kind of we're giving you these new authors, people. Don't complain if you ain't got nothing to read. That's what I want to see. I hear this all the time. I'm like, I don't know why you're complaining. We give you all these great authors all the time. Just got to go out and get it. We're going to be back here after a quick break with our next guest of the morning, last guest of the morning, Karen Kesnick-Innen. She's going to tell me how to pronounce it because I just butchered it. It's K-E-S-K-I-N-E-N. So we'll have to see. But, hey, in the meantime, here you go. Listen to this and enjoy. Welcome back, everybody, to the show. Again, we want to thank Johnny Shaw for being on there, and you got to check him out at johnnyshaw.net. Now we're going to transition here into our last guest of the show. She is the author of the Jamie Zarlin Mystery Series. Her latest book is called Black Current. I told you I butchered her name. Her name is Karen Keskinen, and her first book was called Blood Orange, which set up the series. So we want to welcome Karen. Karen, thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me, John.
So again, like I said, Blood Orange kind of started it off, and now you're in Black Current with your Jamie Zarlin Mystery Series. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about the series, maybe who Jamie is, go back to Blood Orange since it's book two, kind of give a little bit of background so they kind of have an understanding of exactly, you know, what the series is about and how you're kind of portraying it.
Sure, absolutely. Well, first off, the series is set in Santa Barbara, which is where I live. And it's very much part of Santa Barbara. I think, you know, that old cliche about the setting being a character, well, it's certainly true in this case. And Blood Orange begins with my lady PI, Jamie Zarlin, and she actually has a business where she finds missing people. But what happens in Blood Orange is that she's drawn into investigating a murder, and she's very reluctant to do that initially. But she does do that in Blood Orange, and then by the time the second book, Black Current, rolls around, people are saying that was just a fluke that she solved the initial murder. And by the way, the Blood Orange murders ended up being called the Solstice murders because they happened during our Solstice parade here in Santa Barbara. So once again in Black Current, when she's challenged to get involved with the mystery, she has a little feeling that she'd like to prove people wrong and show that it wasn't a fluke that she solved the first murder correctly.
So now that you're set here in Black Current and now that she kind of has the first thing under her belt, like you said, it's kind of nice to kind of see the flaw where she now has to basically reprove herself where people now have to understand that, you know, that she is. And if anyone's never been to Santa Barbara, first of all, the Solstice Parade is absolutely fascinating. It is one of the best things that goes on in Santa Barbara and one of the best cities in the United States. I mean, hands down, Santa Barbara is. And I've been up there several times and love to go there. But when you see kind of how that city is, and it's an ocean town, it's kind of quiet. You know, you have the main, you know, State Street where there's a lot of shopping going on, and, of course, the Mission and a lot of things happening, great marine life. So there's a lot of things for her to kind of get involved in. But the people, I think, that's the one thing that I never really knew was kind of how the people, because I didn't really live there, so I didn't get that sense. So that's the great thing that you're able to do with Jamie is she has to kind of, you know, that's kind of the reality and kind of living in those kinds of areas, kind of maybe be accepted and those types of things.
Well, yeah, I think really, and this is for real, you know, I moved here about 8 or 9 years ago, and one of the things that I was struck with right away is that all those things that you just said about Santa Barbara are hands down true. The place is gorgeous. There's nature everywhere. And the thing is, though, that it's not that they're not true, but there's also a whole nother reality that runs under this community. And I think there are reasons for that, but it's portrayed, really, you'll even hear the phrase, which is kind of gaggy, but that it's a paradise. Well, you know, even paradise had its snake in it. And there's a whole other side to the town that perhaps because of the tourism industry isn't talked about a lot. So I think that was a big impetus for me to start to write about the area.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not a lot of books that are written about Santa Barbara in that area. I mean, of course, a lot of people are just going to go down to L.A. or they're going to go to San Francisco, and they're going to kind of write about the two bigger cities. So when you're setting a book in a smaller town, you got a lot of little logistical things that you kind of have to do and get right. So how were you kind of able to kind of capture, you know, that that sense of it's a rich town, and there's a lot of money in Santa Barbara because of its course on the ocean, and anytime you have that, you're going to have that. But you have to capture that small town feel with kind of the money and stuff that's involved. Was that one of your biggest challenges?
I would say, I don't know if it was one of the biggest challenges. What it was one of the biggest interests because, mm-hmm. you know, Santa Barbara, any of your listeners who've been here would know it's actually physically tight. You know, we've got the ocean on one side and the mountains directly behind.
Yep.
And so in addition to those wealthy people you're talking about, we have quite a few poor people who are doing all the work of the wealthy people. And I have a line in Blood Orange, the first book, which says the people in the middle are clinging to the cliffs like barnacles because,
yeah.
you know, it's expensive to live here. I think that theme that you just very aptly stated is really maybe one of the major ones that runs through what I do.
And so let's talk about Jamie here. What makes Jamie, when you started the series, what makes her the perfect one to kind of, to be the star, and for lack of a better term?
Okay. Well, Jamie is a relative newcomer. She came to town, and this isn't the underlying story in these books. She came to town because her brother was here, and her brother was mentally ill, homeless, and it had taken her a long time to really understand that he was asking for help. And she got down here and wanted to help him, and then it wasn't too long after. And all of this is for Blood Orange, I want to explain.
Mm-hmm.
He actually died in the downtown jail. So Jamie did not want to leave, and she didn't fully understand what had happened to her brother, and that question of what happened to him runs through the books. So she has a reason she needs to be here, and because of the pain of all that, and also the fact that she needed to get some work going, she decided to start her business of finding missing people. And often those people are people with mental illness, by the way. Families are looking for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think she's just the perfect person. She's part of the community, and yet in a way she's also an outsider. So she's always struggling to learn more about it and to understand it better.
Huh. Very interesting. I mean, when you're making a character and you have to try to make them complex because, you know, she's kind of on her own and having to do a lot of things, there always is a lot of intrigue and a lot of backstory that makes them and kind of molds them who they are, whether they're hard or they're soft or how they react in certain situations and when certain things come up, and also having to face certain villains. And sometimes when you're having to, you know, create the villains, you're creating them around the character and around their weaknesses, because that's one of the things that you have to do, because that's the intense part of it. So when you're creating, like, your villain and the ones that's going to be, you know, taking her on, how are you kind of constructing that when you're writing this, when you're writing the book?
Yeah. Well, and not only the villain, but we haven't mentioned her sidekick, Gabby Gutierrez. Because Gabby is very much, how can I put this, almost a dancing partner with Jamie in a way. So they complement, they oppose and complement one another. And Gabby's very much a part of the community. And, of course, she's Mexican, and she is part of the other side of Santa Barbara. And so the two of them, and also their personalities, are kind of diametrically opposed. It's a great fun to write their interaction. So it's not just Jamie that shapes what happens and the other characters. It's actually Gabby as well.
So then, kind of back when you know, kind of back into the villain kind of thing. How is that construction kind of going? I mean, how are you, you know, what are you doing as like an author in order to get that, you know, that good, you know, antagonist in there to
okay.
kind of make the story, you know, more well-rounded?
Well, the villain is interesting because I don't want to give too much away, John, but in the first book, the villain's a classic villain. He's an evil guy. And I will just say one thing and no more than this. He is the only character in the first book that I actually did model on a real person. But I don't want to sound too mystical and everything, but for some reason, the second book carried me in a different direction. And I wrote a different kind of story. I don't want to say too much, but the let's just say that perpetrator is a very human person. So instead of that huge battle of good and evil that I think was in the first book, I think the second book really, for some reason, looks at the evil that we all can do, for want of a better way of saying it. Yeah.
And so what gave you kind of the idea was there a certain kind of, author that you decided, you know what, I want to start getting involved in thrillers, this is what I want to write? What was kind of your thought process and why thrillers?
Yeah, that is a really good question. And the answer really, again, it's funny, because the answer goes back to the town, to Santa Barbara. Because when I came here, I wanted to write about the town, and I read and loved mysteries. I wasn't, a huge mystery fan, but I loved them. My first thought wasn't, I'd never tried a mystery before, but I think because I was so interested in the city itself and the interactions, when I say the city, I mean the interactions of the people and the physical environment, I was so interested in it that somehow the mystery seemed right for what I wanted to do. And that's why. Now, if you're wondering who kind of inspired me, right away I'm going to say Andrea Camilleri. I really love that writer. And the others that I love, too, I love Craig Johnson, I love Denise Nina, and I could give you more. And these are looking back on it now, that these are all writers who have, they're dark, but they have humor. So it's that combination. I want to read it, and I want to write that, too.
And I'm lucky because I just interviewed Craig for the magazine coming up here in July. So, yeah, he's a nice guy. So it's good. So they were to talk with him. That'll be
nice.
Yeah,
I met him this spring. Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, because Longmire is one of my favorite shows right now on TV, and I'm only like a 3 or 4 person TV guy. I'm not one of those guys who can watch 80,000 TV shows, and that's all I do. I pick like 3 or 4. And that's what it is, and I just stick with those. And Longmire is definitely that I watch religiously. Yeah, I love the character.
I feel Longmire picked the wrong gal in the show, but otherwise I'm totally with it.
Yeah. So we're talking here with author Karen Kesnikin, and it's
Kesnikin, John.
Kesnikin. Kesnikin. Okay. So it's KESKINEN.com, so KarenKesnikin.com. And you can find out a lot more about the series and everything that you got going on. So let's talk a little bit here about, publishing and in general and how, and like your journey when you decided you got Blood Orange, launched. Were you scared to death that you had to talk to people like me now?
it is funny. I love talking to people in groups or one-on-one or giving talks. But as soon as there's some, radio or TV, for some reason, I do tense up a little bit. I will meet you down at Long Beach, and then we'll have a more intense conversation.
Yes. Yeah. So how was it when you had to go out there and you had to start promoting Blood Orange? Because a lot of authors, of course, they would rather just stay behind their computer, write, get it out there, and really not have to do a lot of the marketing. I mean, that's not really your your forte. I mean, that's not what you guys do. You guys are writers. So how was it when you're, you know, when all of a sudden you, you had to do it?
Right. Well, in the beginning, you just got to finish the book and polish the book, and that's all the good work. And then because there's very little money put behind publicity or promotion nowadays, you have to get out and you do it. And most of it I really enjoy. In fact, I keep reminding myself I might be enjoying it a little bit too much, because what you can do is you can get a little big-headed, because people want to talk to an author, and then fortunately you have to go home and sit down behind that computer and realize you're just a little piece of nothing because you've got to start all over again, and it's hard. So that's a good kind of equalizer there. But what I do, I have to say that seriously, the publicity can be kind of distracting, and the of course the publisher wants you to do it, and I think there has to be a way to really draw the lines firmly, and I may not have completely discovered that yet. So you have to be able to do both, but you can't ever do it at the expense of your work, or you're in trouble, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things, like I said, when we always talk to a lot of authors, they're like, when I first started out, I wasn't too keen on having to do those types of things, and that was like the hardest part. And of course, marketing, I always say marketing is a lot harder than actually writing the book, without a doubt. I mean, having to go out there, and even though you wrote about it, even to have to go out there and talk about it is not that easy. I mean, you don't know what kind of questions you're going to get, and you're just really not sure. But I think it's a little hard for authors, and I always find that they kind of struggle with that a little bit, which is why we try to make this nice and easy, and it's just on here just talking and blah, 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 and just kind of doing your thing. So, but, yeah, I always like to hear the stories to see how they kind of handle that, because now you're in the public light. You got Facebook, Twitter, media, all these social things that you have to keep up on, and people are talking to you 24 hours a day if you let them.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, it's still the same old truth, though, also, that if you start talking too much about your work, you're probably going to hurt it in some way. What you're currently working on, you have to keep pretty close to the chest, because if you start blabbing about it, then it somehow freezes it. It makes it kind of into, you know, a stalactite or something. It's a little hard to explain. And when you're writing a series, if you're talking about the book, the first book, and you're on the third one, they're still kind of part of the same work. So I do find a challenge in that.
Yeah. Now, besides BoucherCon, are there any other events, are there any other places where you get to be, where fans can kind of talk with you and see what you're doing, you know, see what you got going on? Did you go to a lot of these events, book signings and things like that?
Well, I did go to Left Coast Con in Monterey. That was really a blast. And I think I'm going to, I just did a book signing at Chaucer's in Santa Barbara. I'm going to do some more, but I'm also beginning the third book right now, so I'm going to have a little period in here where I want to kind of go into my cave and, you know, close the door, if there are doors on caves, that is.
Right.
So right now the only one I'm thinking about is BoucherCon, but I have a feeling maybe I should think about doing a few more things in the fall. So we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know after BoucherCon kind of what they got going on. I think that kind of ends the season for the year, besides Thriller Fest, which is coming up, of course, in a month in July. Now, are you a member of ITW?
I am. I just became a member, and actually, starting tonight, I'm leading one of their roundtable discussions. And I think they also either, I don't know if it's come out yet, I think it has, an interview they did with me. And they're a wonderful organization. I've never been to Thriller Fest, and I actually am kind of debating about going to that one because I've heard it's a wonderful conference.
Yeah, that's the one that we go to every year religiously because it is wonderful. You're able to you know, stand next to all your peers. Whether they've sold 10 million books or they've sold 10 books, it doesn't make a difference. Everybody's the same, and you're able to just learn a lot and just take your writing to that kind of different level if you let it. They're very, very, very supportive, and they just and that's why we love to be able to go. And then you see a lot of fans, and it's always a great time to just kind of talk with everybody.
Well, I'll think about it. You just about got me convinced there, John.
See, I try, you know. I try to do what I can do. So when you're not writing, I mean, what's kind of the thing that, you know, Karen kind of does? I mean, what do you like to do?
God, my life has been so overwhelmingly busy, but you've got me. Well, just apropos to this, I will tell you that I might be a little different than some writers in that I am around town a lot. I don't really know how else to explain it, because part of writing these books is going out and doing things, and there's never a shortage of things to do in this area or a shortage of interesting people to meet, and I mean from every walk of life. And I make sure I do that. I go somewhere that I haven't gone, or I talk to somebody I've never talked to. I do this several times every week. I hike and do a few other things that people do. But the books, the series, let's put it that way, is really a part of my life.
Yeah. I sit here and thought about it. I had the question down and I didn't ask you, but what's the significance of, you know, like blood orange and black currant? I mean, of course it's fruit. It kind of sounds like jelly. Why kind of that kind of theme?
Well, it's funny. As you probably know, titles are one thing that a writer cannot have the final say on the title. The marketing department of the publishing house does that. But we've gone through many, many titles and not come up with anything. And I finally said, you know, I've always wanted to publish a book called Blood Orange. And they said, great, that's it. So that was kind of the first stone was cast, you know. And then when it came around, they wanted a second one that was also a sinister fruit. And there are not a lot of sinister fruits out there. So, but then the notion of black currant, but of course it's spelled differently. But the thing is, the title Black Currant, to me, it is the perfect title for the book. Not because it's a fruit, but because, again, I don't want to get too much away, but there's at least one drowning death.
Significance to the title, I guess. That's just what we'll say, right?
Yes. Thank you, John. Exactly.
Yeah. And the one thing, too, when people look at the cover and they're going to see the ocean and they're going to see the mountains in the background, yep, that's Santa Barbara, or that's close to the way it looks. I mean, you definitely... I just said, if people have never been there, it's got to be a city on your list that you have to go visit once in your life. I mean, because there's really nothing like it, the way that it's set up.
Absolutely. It's a lot of fun. I love the book covers and the colors and the design. She in this, on the black currant cover, she looks a little bit too much like a beach babe, but otherwise I adore
her. That's okay. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with looking like a beach babe.
Oh, no, not from your point of view.
You know, you got to get the men reading it, too.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. So, well, I'll tell you what, Karen, I want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been fascinating talking to you. And, of course, about the books that you got going on here in your series with Blood Orange and now Black Current, your Jamie Zarlin mystery series. And, you know, we'll stay in touch. We'll see you down in BatcherCon. And if you ever... You know, drop us a line and then tell us what's going on, too.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me on, John. I really appreciate it. I look forward to meeting you.
And I do, too. So I want to thank you again for coming on.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
All right. Bye-bye. So, again, everybody, that is author Karen Kesnick. God, I just screwed up again. Karen Kesnick. And it is K-E-S-K-I-N-E-N. KESKINEN.com to find out a lot more information about her work, Jamie Zarlin Mystery Series, Blackcurrant, Blood Orange, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold, you can definitely find it. And we want to thank everyone for listening to the show today, for Johnny Shaw, and for having him on. It's been great. We've had a three-hour marathon here weekend for the radio show. We got Spence Radio 2 hours yesterday with author Steve Barry and others, and now today with another hour. So we're bringing them to you rapid fire. You're going to have Crime and Science Radio coming up next Saturday. We're going to have Robin Bursell on. And you just never know when little mysteries and little things hit. So you just got to keep up with us and see what's going on. Hit SpenceMagazine.com. And our next issue is going to be out here in the next couple days. So until next time, everybody, enjoy. We'll see y'all. Signing off. I'm out of here.